Here we go on Unit 2, Lesson 2, page 38, Jesus' Paradoxes. And this begins with the Beatitude, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." So the first question is, why is there mourning? Look at the context in Matthew 5, 3 through 12 for situations that would cause grief. So I have that there's sadness and mourning because of being poor in spirit, needy, desperate. There's mourning because of hunger and thirst for righteousness. It's like there's so much of a desire for it that it grieves you that you don't have it, or that you want it so much that it's just as a grief. And then desiring mercy, and in pain because of persecution and insult and evil. The persecution, insult, and evil probably is going to stand out more than anything, and that's fine. I just was thinking that these other situations can make you upset because you just have such a great longing for the mercy, and if you desire righteousness that much. All right, the next question is, when does the blessedness happen? When does the mourning happen? When does the comforting happen? So the blessedness is right now in the present for us. And the mourning is right now in the present. And then it says, in the future, they will be comforted. So that is the promise. Comfort is coming. By the way, somebody, if anybody's using their previous notebook, those two first questions have been flipped from before. And just in case anybody notices that. In the middle paragraph, or in the middle of that paragraph, the second through the seventh Beatitudes each use a future tense. This shows us that we don't receive everything related to the kingdom of heaven yet. This is an already and not yet perspective. The kingdom of heaven is at hand and is still yet to come and to be realized in its entirety. So how will we be comforted in the future? And these are all really great verses. I want to just go over Romans 8:18 for this particular lesson. The sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing to the glory to be revealed. So yes, there's suffering now, but compared to what's coming, it doesn't compare. That one stood out to me. But there are other things to talk about, which is why we're not going to go over each of those verses individually. And the next question at the top of page 39, from whom does this comfort come? And it's referring back to the comfort that we've seen described in all those verses. How does Matthew 5:4 communicate that this comfort is coming? And the way the verb is written is that it's a passive verb. They will be comforted. And this tells us that the comfort has to come from outside of us. We are not comforting ourselves. And then also just with what we've learned from the previous verses at the bottom of page 38, the comfort comes from God. So if I have just set things up and you would rather go over all the verses at the bottom of page 38 and not skip any of them, that certainly is your prerogative. Back at the top of page 39. While being comforted is a blessing from our relationship with the Lord, it's also something to be shared. And I just loved this verse. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies, and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. So He comforts us in all our affliction so that we can comfort others who are in any affliction. That just should give us a good perspective on the difficulties that we go through and help us be sympathetic and empathetic, care, offer comfort to others. You don't have to go through the same thing that someone else goes through to be able to offer comfort to them. So the next question, what do you think? Does Matthew 5:4 mean that Christians are happy and sad at the same time during our lives here on earth right now? This is a good discussion question, and to get more than one person to comment. So just open it up. Make sure you do that. My answer is yes. We are blessed now. We're happy, overjoyed. Remember from the previous lesson how we talked about what Makarios means and how incredibly happy we can be. And at the same time, we are mourning because of the difficulties, our present suffering here. But we have a hope, and we have incomprehensible happiness now because of what we can anticipate. Then we move to the next characteristics of the citizen of heaven, found in Matthew 5:5. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. It will be good for you to read that and just state that particular beatitude so that we'll know the shift and we'll know the next one that we're going to be looking at. So you looked up the word meek. It's the Greek word praeus. And the Greek definition that I have is a mild and friendly disposition, gentle, kind, considerate, meek, humble. And then I think it's a good idea to discuss what you learned from Psalm 37, 7 through 11. Because this beatitude is actually a quote from that psalm. What's the problem in these verses? There are evildoers and wicked men prospering, carrying out their schemes. If you feel like you need to move along, then you could actually state that problem yourself. But what is the instruction? So definitely have ladies answer that themselves. And it's the instruction is to rest in the Lord, wait patiently for Him, don't fret, cease from anger, forsake wrath. And what is the promise? The humble will inherit the land and will delight in abundant prosperity. I was looking at the different translations. I use the CSB, the Holman Christian Standard Bible. It says humble. NAS says humble. The ESV, New King James, NIV, all use the word meek. So ladies should see the connection quickly with that version. The New Living Translation, NLT, says lowly. The lowly will inherit the land. Just in case that comes up, wanted you to know. Turning the page. How do the meek behave based on the definition and verses above? Good discussion question. How do they behave? Humbly, patiently, gently, forsaking anger and wrath. It's the opposite of self-assertiveness. And there is a hope as well. And I would ask, as this is being discussed, do you behave this way? Are you meek? I also just out on the margin of my book wrote, take a deep breath, be calm, and trust God. Let's go to the fourth beatitude now. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Matthew 5:6. And let's talk about this question. What happens to you when you are extremely hungry or thirsty? I think there'll be some, kind of funny answers. Just with like, get so upset or hangry. And I want to draw out like, what do you focus on? And for me, I'm thinking, I can't think about anything else. And I focus on what I want. I'm so hungry. What do I want? What is going to help me? Where is the food? When do I get to eat? That's the analogy that Jesus intended for us to make. It's hungering and thirsting. We know what that feels like. And that is how we are to feel about righteousness. In my italicized paragraph there, The placement in the middle of the Beatitudes highlights righteousness. So once again, I'm just highlighting that the Sermon on the Mount is about righteousness. So what is righteousness? And you looked back at page 20 to get a summary. So people should probably have pretty much the same answers. To conform to an ethical or moral standard. By the way, God is the standard to which we are to conform. And righteousness is what God requires. It's what is right based on what he says. And then you have the box at the bottom there. In Matthew, righteousness speaks of right behavior before God. So that would just be kind of a concluding statement. I think you can skip the verses at the top of page 41 and just go to the middle question, or the question in the middle of the page, because this connects back to our opening question. When you're hungry and thirsty and your physical needs are satisfied, does that mean you'll never be hungry or thirsty again? And how does this relate to longing for righteousness? So just like we always need food, we always need righteousness, and we need to pursue righteousness and want it. And one note that I made was that I'm glad that I can't overindulge on righteousness. There will never be too much of it in my life. Righteousness should be a lifestyle. Then just concluding this lesson and getting ready to transition into the next one, keep in mind that the Beatitudes describe the characteristics and behaviors of one who is following Jesus Christ. And hopefully this helped you think about that and pray that the Lord would transform you into one who is poor in spirit, mourning, meek, and yearning for righteousness. And that was a really good reminder to me to pray for this and to consider this as regular characteristics. For me, the fruit of the Spirit is an easy list to be reminded of, like, I want to see God do this in my life. But here, I'm like, oh yeah, this is just the way that I am supposed to be all the time. And I need to make a note of that somewhere where I can see it. All right, that's the end of that lesson.